Show, Shapeshifters.
This is The Muddy Show. I'm Bruce Whitfield. Rob Stokes is our shapeshifter this evening. Who is Rob Stokes? Well, he's an entrepreneur. He is the guy who founded the digital ad agency Quirk, and then he sold that to Sir Martin Sorrell's WPP in the United Kingdom. And nowadays, he is the chairman of Red and Yellow. It's a creative school, but he's turned it into a creative school of business. We're going to find out all about that this evening. But most famously, a couple of weeks ago, Rob Stokes issued a press release saying, "We want bright young things, people who invested in Bitcoin when it was worth nothing, to come and pay for their tuition using Bitcoin." And then Bitcoin was between $15,000 and $20,000 a Bitcoin. Today it fell to, at its lowest point, to $9,470. It's more than halved. Is this still a good deal? Can I still get a business degree for a Bitcoin?
You definitely can. we are in the bloodbath, the annual Bitcoin bloodbath. If you
is it
back.
An annual Bitcoin bloodbath?
Yeah, beginning of the year, the last, I think, 3 or 4 years, certainly the time I've been in Bitcoin, beginning of the year, it's been a big tank. But if you're in it for the long term, if you're a hodler, as they say, it's water for duck's back.
What's a hodler? A hodler is somebody who's a Bitcoin disciple.
It stemmed from a blog post many years ago where I think some guy in the middle of the night, probably sleep deprived or drunk, said, "I'm hodling," in other words, instead of saying holding, and it was a spelling error, I think.
Was it Donald Trump?
I'm hodling!
Yes. People say it stands for hold on for dear life. but, you know, I'm a long-term believer in Bitcoin, so this is just another bump in the road.
Yeah.
In terms of Red and Yellow accepting Bitcoin, we don't take the currency risk. So it's just the same as one of our international students paying in dollars or pounds. We switch it for rands instantly. So they would just pay the prevailing rate. So it's really just using...
Okay, so whatever the rands... So if you were selling a course for 10,000 rand, you would take 0.75 of a Bitcoin or a full Bitcoin, depending on the rate.
Exactly. At the time they pay it, we exchange it probably within 20 minutes.
Okay. Now, give me a sense then of your days when you started Quirk. I mean, Quirk became a big South African digital agency in a time, I suppose, before we knew what digital agencies were and before agencies were digital.
Yeah, I mean, there was probably a period of about 5 years where we were a digital agency before anyone wanted one, which wasn't the smartest thing. It makes me sound future focused, but actually timing is everything. I started Quirk in 99. I was in my third year of business science at UCT. I've always been a bit of an entrepreneur, and I had decided about 2 months prior that I didn't want to have another waitering job. And then 2 months after the quitting of the waitering job, I ran out of money and I thought, I better start a business. Let's do something in technology. What should we call it? Oh, there's my cat. Her name's Quirk and Bob's your uncle. And for 3 or 4 years, we kind of muddled around with everything.
Because we got to go back to 1999 and work out what it was going then. Then every second day, there was a brand new listing on the JSE of somebody who had found a computer and some sticky tape and some press stick and had cobbled something together, which was called a tech business, and was listing it on the JSE, and that was happening in the United States to the tune of tens of millions of dollars, and then it all went pop.
Yep.
Your timing was impeccable.
Well, yes and no. And I will say this. It was actually, so I started Quirk my third year of my four-year degree. In year four, Mark Shuttleworth came and spoke to our class. And it was
he famous by then?
He was famous by then.
Had he made his billions by then?
He was a huge hero. And I saw this guy up in front of the class. And he was so down to earth. And it was, he was a large part of why I carried on with Quirk after university. Because I just thought, if he can do it, so can I. I mean, it turns out he's much smarter than me.
And what he'd done is he'd created a security product.
A security certificate. So if you go to a website, it says this website can be trusted.
And they're still there? They're still using those, aren't they?
The certificate's absolutely still there. I mean, Mark will be the first to admit that his break was luck more than skill. I mean, he had the skill to be in the right place at the right time.
And he created something that everybody needed at that point.
But it existed already. His point of luck, I think, was when Internet Explorer said, "We will use your certificate as a standard." And suddenly, effectively, had a micro-monopoly situation. And also, I think, incredibly astutely of him, cashed out his shares before the dot
bomb. He did so well.
Yeah, amazing. And he is. I mean, he's busy building a new business, Canonical, which I think...
Where is he?
He's in the UK, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a great guy. I don't know him personally, but everything he's done these days is very purpose-driven, which really resonates with me. He's made his money. Now he wants to leave his mark. I feel the same way. But yeah, he was a huge inspiration to me to kind of carry on and persevere.
So you sort of stumbled along with Quirk for 4 years. What was the next key point for Quirk, 2003, 2004?
Yeah, by about 2002, 2003, we were calling ourselves an e-marketing agency. Again, no one actually wanted that. I remember very clearly going and seeing a lady at FMB in about 2004, and I said to her, I can get your site to the top of Google. And she turned around and said, that seems pointless, please leave. And 3 years later, I got a call from the same person saying, can you still get my site to the top of Google?
Because now it's no longer pointless, it's essential.
It's essential.
Because Michael Yordana said we must get our site
exactly.
to the top of Google.
And actually, I think what changed in South Africa to the benefit of Quirk was actually Facebook, because it made the internet real. It was the everyman's internet tool. And suddenly marketing managers thought, hey, maybe there's a marketing opportunity here. And we were fortunate to be known as a digital marketing agency at that time. And so we became the go-to guys. And gosh, for a period of about 5 years, it was incredible. I mean, we were growing so fast, we didn't know what to do with ourselves. It was a beautiful time. I loved it.
Man, you must have been learning on the job.
So, I mean, so much.
You were inventing a new genre of communication.
I always say I live the Peter Principle. I am the Peter Principle. I've never had a proper job. So everything I do, I make it up as I go along. And often, 10 years after I've made a decision, someone gives me a piece of advice that is so obvious to everyone else in the world, and I look back and slap myself on the forehead and wish I'd learned something different. But that's part of the adventure, I guess. As an entrepreneur, you have to make it up as you go along.
At what point did you decide you needed to get out of it?
When someone came along and
said he has a check.
Yeah, I mean, we were never interested in selling, and suddenly the market was very hot. We had about six or seven companies trying to buy us. The one who initially approached us, we didn't have a cultural fit with, and we were really grateful when WPP came along. And
WPP is one of the biggest advertising, if not the biggest advertising agency in the world. So Martin Sorrell, who becomes very famous at this time of the year because he goes to Davos and appears on every single panel discussion and will opine on whether the door should be opened or closed or not. I mean, have you met him?
I've met him briefly, yeah. He's a tough cookie.
He's a tough
biscuit. He's a very smart chap.
He's a Rusk.
Let me tell you. Not a sugary Rusk.
No. He's very, very smart. And this is the guy then, I mean, I don't know if he's retired yet.
No, he hasn't.
He must be in his 70s.
I would say mid-70s, yeah.
And is a daunting force.
No, I mean, if you're in front of Martin Sorrell, no matter who you are, you are a bit scared.
Mm.
He's just so clever. He remembers everything. There's no gap that you can sneak through with that guy. I am a bit intimidated by him, but I find him very inspiring. He's also not an advertising and marketing guy in any way. He's a financier. He's a deal maker. And he manages his businesses accordingly, which is why they've been so successful.
And so they bought Quirk, and did you leave the next day? Or?
No, I stayed about a year and a half, 2 years. But honestly, and taking nothing away from them, they're a great company, but I am just too free-spirited to work within a system.
But isn't it hard? I mean, especially in this world, we have very romantic ideas of technology companies, of young people in board shorts and Havaianas and T-shirts, not washing for a week and starting these great businesses and eating pizza out of the box. You grow a business organically like that. It has to have some sort of emotional tie to it, surely.
It did. I was more emotionally tied to the people. And the truth is when
And then you, the money came and you got emotionally tied to the money.
No, even that, I don't really care about money that much, as my friends will tell you. I like my home, and beyond that, I just want to have fun and have an adventure and have a nice family. But, when you sell a business like that, that we were so independent, we were so culturally driven as an organization, we just had so much fun. And you become part of a bigger system, which has very real and necessary reporting systems and whatnot, and it can be quite burdensome.
And it becomes boring after a while, and you start ticking boxes, and it's... Ugh.
Yeah, look, if I'm honest, I was probably a bit bored before that already. Mm-hmm. I do think there are some systemic issues with the marketing and advertising industry, which are going to take a while to work through. And in that time, it's a tough, tough business to be in. I mean, if you're a great agency, of which there are some in South Africa, you can still do very well, but there's no barriers to entry. You can walk out the store and say, hi, I'm an ad agency, and you are.
Get some free software online and off you go.
Exactly. And, you know, when you're operating in that kind of space, it's hard to have a competitive edge and maintain a competitive edge.
When did you get involved in Red and Yellow then?
So actually, I got involved in Red and Yellow in 2001. I was called in by the MD at the time, John Cooney, who put together, in conjunction with some other folk, a week of digital. And I was one of the speakers. And I probably lectured there once or twice a year since then. And then in 2012, John came to see me at Quirk to get some advice on how to make Red and Yellow more digital across the board, not just with a special week. And where it ended up was the realization that in its current form, that probably wasn't going to be possible. The shareholders who'd been in the business for probably almost 20 years at that time were getting on, ready for retirement. And so we struck a deal for myself and my business partners at Quirk to buy Red and Yellow.
So Red and Yellow had started in, what, 1994 as a place to teach creativity. I mean, I don't know. Can you teach creativity? Yeah, but you can enhance creativity.
You definitely can teach it. Look, it helps to have a slate that isn't completely blank. You know, mm-hmm. Some people are inherently geniuses and creative.
And some people aren't.
But look, I think you can add 50% on. So if you're starting at naught, we'll get you to 50. If you're starting at 49, we'll get you to 99. Not only anyone's 100. Red and Yellow was started in 94 by some of the legends of South African creativity, the former founders of Ogilvy, which is still today probably the best agency in South Africa.
So it was started by advertising people. Was the idea to create an advertising industry supply chain of people?
Right. It was to teach the very practical skills of advertising and marketing for the workplace. In fact, back then, they very explicitly didn't want to offer any sort of certification, degrees, diplomas, and what have you. Obviously, the world has changed dramatically since then. That's become a very important part of life. And the change of Red and Yellow now in the last few years is we've realized two things. One, we're really good at teaching people to think creatively and good at teaching people to be leaders in a creative space. And added to that, and much more importantly, we believe very fundamentally that creative thinking is the most important business skill of the future.
And we're going to pause there for just a moment, because I want that to percolate. Creative thinking is the most important business skill of the future. Why on earth would creative thinking? I mean, creative accounting has been the most useful business skill of the last generation, but that gets you horribly unstuck. Creative thinking, why is that a valuable tool? More with Rob Stokes, the founder of the agency formerly known as Quirk, nowadays chairman at Red and Yellow Creative School of Business.
The Money Show. Shapeshifters.
Our shapeshifter is Rob Stokes. He's an entrepreneur. He's chairman of Red and Yellow Creative School of Business. Just before we took a breather, Rob Stokes says creative thinking is the biggest business tool of the future, and it feeds into this whole idea of the droids are coming to take the jobs. And every industrial revolution has had that feel about it. Ned Ludd destroyed the looms in the 1700s because he thought the looms would take away the weavers' jobs. In fact, it just made mass industrialization possible. And then we had electricity and then computing power, which has broadened the world. Why is this fourth industrial revolution, this revolution of AI, a bigger real threat to jobs than any other industrial revolution coming before it?
Because they're not replacing our hands, they're replacing our brains.
Ah!
Simple as that. And look, there will be new jobs created that we haven't thought of before. But for me, the best example is commercial drivers. In the US, there's 8.7 million of them. So that's fairly obvious that they're all going to be out of work within, let's say, 20 years, being conservative. But it's not just that. Think about how many industries are supported by drivers, like insurance. You know, the only reason we'd move to autonomous cars is because they're dramatically safer. I think they already are today. It's just legislation stands in the way. So the insurance industry will change, if not fall away down to like a 5 or 10% level. Then in the US, as another example, all major highways, there's huge industries along those highways in servicing truckers and, you know, motels and quick shops, et cetera, gone. In a world where you can get in your car and wake up in New York tomorrow.
Well, if Elon Musk gets the Hyperloop right, then there's the airline industry is in trouble. The car industry is in trouble because suddenly you jump into a tube and whoosh, an hour later you have crossed America.
Yeah. And you know, when you talk about robots taking the jobs, it's the word robots I think is the problem. People think about factories and they think about factories building cars with robots, but that's already happened. I was saying to someone earlier in a conversation with some friends, we were talking about this and they were kind of complacent saying, well, yeah, the jobs are going to go. And one mate's an accountant, the other one's a lawyer. And I said to them, your jobs are in the firing line, guys, because a lot of what you do requires memory. And memory is no longer a valuable asset. It's commodity. advertised. Teaching memory, at Red and Yellow, it's open book tests across the board. We want to test that you know your stuff, not can remember your stuff. You can look it up in Google if you need to, but if you can't apply it, what use are you?
There was such a great quote from a guy who's an advisor to the OECD last week. It's like education doesn't matter what you know. Google knows everything. It's what you do with what you know.
Exactly.
That matters, and this is where you're coming from at Red and Yellow.
Exactly. We not only teach people the skills, give them the knowledge to grow their careers, et cetera, et cetera, but obviously as an academic institution, and we think a reputable one, we certify that you know that knowledge. I read your article in the Sunday Times about free education, and for me there's two sides of that. There's free knowledge and free certification. The certification bit is the hard part, and you can still have a free university that gives a good education and certifies people accordingly. But for me, if you want to learn, everything's for free on the internet.
Yeah.
I think it was Elon Musk who said, if you have student debt, it's only your own ego that got you there because you wanted the piece of paper. Now, look, that's an unfair statement because the piece of paper is a critical signal in the market that you know some stuff. But that's
the argument about education versus the certificate. If you want real education, you can go and get yourself educated. You can learn all of the skills that you need. And if you can apply those skills better than anybody's got a piece of paper, you should be at the front of the jobs queue. But unfortunately, we're not evolved enough yet to get there.
Look, there's a reason why Red and Yellow graduates, we have 98-99% employment, because the piece of paper from Red and Yellow, the degree or the certificate, diploma, whatever you get, is really meaningful. We don't just throw people through a course for the sake of money. We really pride ourselves on the quality of our alumni. And as a result, I mean, one of our alumni runs Red Bull across China. So not in advertising or marketing. He was an alumni 15 years ago. But we teach people to be business leaders. And when someone's employing one of our alumni, they look at that piece of paper and its quality. If you go and read a bunch of stuff on the internet, you may still know your stuff, but there's no signal to the employer. I do believe over the next generation that is going to change. Mm-hmm. I think there's a big disruption on the horizon for the academic sector. And I'm quite excited about that. And I think it's going to be driven by your favorite thing, Bruce, the blockchain.
Yeah, I mean, bless the blockchain. One day we'll work it out. people think that I hate cryptocurrencies. I don't hate cryptocurrencies. I hate hype, and I hate people. I hate ordinary people being sucked into hype.
Agreed.
And that is the big problem there. Future-proofing careers. And so in this environment where people who do memory work, the lawyers and the doctors, the people who study Latin, and so they could remember Quo Vadis, Nec Aspera Terrent, Fiat Lux, or whatever your favorite motto is, you don't need to know that stuff anymore.
No.
You need to know the best strategy to get your client off, or to get your deal done, or to get that consummated.
Exactly. So, you know, robots will not take all the lawyers' jobs, but they'll probably take 90% of them. The cream of the crop are the ones that are able to take their legal knowledge and craft, whether it's contracts or any sort of deal, negotiation, what have you, in a way that's unexpected. And it's the unexpected that computers struggle with, because they are programmed through a set of rules. And if the rules don't exist, how would you program a computer to do that? So it's not a case of zero lawyers, zero doctors, etc., but they're going to be augmented dramatically. And as a result, the number of jobs in those sectors is going to drop. The CEO of Deloitte globally says this is the biggest thing she worries about, because the future leaders of Deloitte come from the bottom. The bottom is the bit that's being replaced by AI. I mean, if you want an audit clerk, an AI can do that fairly well. You know, maybe replace 10 audit clerks and keep one, let the AI do the rest.
Somebody's got to switch the computer on in the morning, obviously.
Yeah, but the problem for Deloitte is 20 years down the line, they don't have the juniors to become the seniors, and their organization, as she puts it, is moving from a triangle to a diamond. And that's a very, very early barometer. But, you know, I think there's going to be an increase in jobs that involve empathy. But sadly, humans don't value that enough. You know, a carer at the bedside of a terminally ill patient actually is an incredibly, incredibly valuable thing. But
the primary school
really
teacher, the primary
exactly.
school teacher's got the same problem.
I have a real issue with the way we pay teachers. It's one of the most important jobs in society, and we don't give them the respect.
Do you pay your teachers better than the UCT Graduate School of Business pays theirs?
I don't know. I know we pay them well. the impact a teacher can have on a human's life. But again, you know, technology needs to augment it. The concept of the flipped classroom, where instead of giving a rote lecture, let the teacher help with the problem solving, because that's the hard part. A quote I love is that no one owns Pythagoras' theorem. And so why not find the best oak in the world or lady who can teach Pythagoras' theorem? Film them doing it. Give it to a kid on a tablet. Let them watch that lecture 20 times, but then let them use the teacher's very valuable human time to work through Pythagoras' theorem, see where they're not getting it right, that the teacher can help them out.
The square on the hypotenuse is equal to the sum of the square on the other two sides.
It seems obvious, Bruce, but about a year ago I bought a ladder and accidentally bought an 18-meter ladder instead of a 7-1 because obviously my Pythagoras' theorem is a bit weak. But
I still don't know what that means, by the way. I just remember I just remember the theorem. Rob Stokes, what a pleasure to see you, and I wish you luck with Red and Yellow. I mean, is this full-time for you? Are you sort of chilling and taking it easy for now?
Look, it's pretty full-time. I absolutely love it. I think where it's different to my previous career is it's about purpose. And suddenly there's a whole new motivation for me. I mean, last year we had our graduation, and it's so moving. It's so emotional to see these students, particularly the ones who are bursary students, having an opportunity that they would never have otherwise had. And we're really proud of how many bursary students we facilitate. And that gives me more than any salary could possibly give me.
You don't need the salary. You sold your business to WPP. Rob Stokes, tonight's shapeshifter. He's the guy who started the digital agency Quirk and now is the chairman of the Creative School of Business called Red and Yellow.